This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. The Cardinals won on Monday night. It's episode 283. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the NFL wire site from USA Today, covering our Arizona Cardinals. And my co-host is Seth Cox from AvengeOfTheBirds.com, and which is the SB Nation site covering the Arizona Cardinals. And the Cardinals won in impressive fashion on Monday Night Football. So we're recording on a Tuesday, so this is kind of extra early for us. It's the night after. And we're going to react to the win and everything kind of around that, because the Cardinals not only won, they won convincingly and are 4-2 and in second place in the NFC West. All's well in Cardinals land, would you say, right now?
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly what you wanted to see. You wanted to see them come out and put up a game against a team that was kind of reeling after the loss of their best player and kind of leader in Dak Prescott. You saw that. They really dismantled this team after what would be considered a very slow start offensively. And, you know, the more that you watch this team when they play well, the more that you're beginning to see that they do have an identity, and it's a little bit different than what we were expecting it to be. But I don't think it's a bad identity for them at all.
Absolutely not. In this edition of the show, we're going to give our initial reactions to the game. Well, basically, how surprised were we at the outcome of the game, considering what the expectations were, how things started? We're going to talk a lot about the defense, because suddenly the Cardinals look good defensively, pretty much every ranking. We'll just spend a couple of segments on that. We'll react to the play on offense, Kyler Murray an off night, but yet a still very impactful night, Kenyon Drake and more. And then we'll look into their next matchup as they return home after three straight road games. They take on the Seattle Seahawks. The first place team in the NFC West before they hit into the bye. So let's go ahead and get started, Seth. How surprised were you at how this game played out?
I wasn't surprised by the final outcome. I was surprised by how the final outcome was obtained, I guess, or how we got there. Defensively, I thought that they could control the game. I was worried about their ability to stop Ezekiel Elliott and that Dallas running game. And you were kind of worried as the game went along in that first quarter and the offense was really struggling to put together drives, that we were really close to getting into the Ezekiel Elliott show and just letting him grind out plays. And that first fumble was just a great play, you know, by Buda Baker, kind of changed the momentum of the game, because then they go down and score right away. And that basically gave the Cardinals that spark they needed on offense, because the rest of the time the defense continued to play at a high level, where, you know, the offense finally put it together and really, you know, in three consecutive series basically put the game away without even having to do anything that you and I would consider extraordinary. I mean, they just kind of imposed their will in the running game, and Kyler finally connected on one deep pass. And it was odd how it came about, because I think we expected to see more of an offensive passing fireworks type of game. And instead, you know, we got a just completely dominant running performance from the Arizona Cardinals and enough passing the ball to get the job done. And I, you know, when you look at the games that they've won in convincing fashion or in, you know, surprising manners, I guess is the best way to put it. Typically it's from a really impressive running game. And you're closer to a 50-50 split in yardage. And this one was, I mean, obviously overwhelmingly, it was the running game, you know, 261 yards rushing, but I was just really impressed with how they overcame what was a stagnant offensive first quarter and just put together, obviously, 38 points. I mean, that's something that they've scored over 30 points in three games this season. That's, we haven't seen that in a while.
Definitely not. I'll be honest, if I go by initial expectations for the game, I thought for sure this was going to be a shootout. I thought that the Cardinals' defense would struggle. I thought they would struggle enough that Dallas has... And I'll be honest, I got caught up in the fact that, you know, as great as Dak Prescott is, I felt that Andy Dalton wasn't too much of a step down. And, whew, well, I guess pretty much everything, because that was kind of a... on social media, on ESPN, that was kind of the what they were saying. It's like, oh, he's surrounded by talent. And Dak Prescott's numbers were in part because of the offensive scheme, the talent around him, because he's got such great receivers. It really had to do a lot about Dak as well. I thought coming it was going to be a back-and-forth game. Bang, it would probably come down to a turnover late in the game at some point, or that the Cardinals would have pulled ahead and that the Cowboys would have rallied, because that's kind of been their MO all year. It's like they fall behind, and then they frantically rally back. That didn't happen. And then when the first quarter looked, you know, like it was a punt fest, I was like, wait, I don't know. So in the end, I was very surprised with the outcome, because I did not expect the Cowboys to look as bad as they did, because a team that was getting bat Leighton Vander Esch, a team that has the talented receiver, a team that has a guy in Ezekiel Elliott, and an established quarterback as their backup in Andy Dalton, but apparently Andy Dalton, I guess, is washed. And now that what's the fun part about this as a fan? Because I will say this. Remember, I'm a Cardinals fan. I've been a Cardinals fan long, long before I was, you know, analyzing the Cardinals for your listening and for your reading. To see what is happening in Dallas now with Mike McCarthy as at their 2-4 start, the drubbing they took by the Cardinals, now there's grumblings about that coaching staff. I know it's only a third of the way into the season, but it almost feels like the Cardinals got Mike McCarthy fired for the second straight time they faced them, which is gratifying in many, many ways. But that said, you look at the final score and you're like, wow. And then you watch them play and you're like, yeah? It's like they're putting up offensive numbers and you're wondering how they do it, because they still don't look like they're in sync. And maybe it's simply the fact that everyone's still expecting massive passing numbers, you know, air raid, Patrick Mahomes in college type numbers. And it has been on the back of the running game. And to be truthful, a lot of that is Kyler Murray. His mobility and his running ability just open up the running game immensely. And so that even when things aren't great in the passing game, it opens things up and they're still able to move the ball. And so I was surprised. I was pleasantly surprised. I was happy. There was really nothing about that game to dislike too much.
No, I mean, when you look at it, it's just kind of what we've been waiting for from the sense of putting together a complete game. And I mean, you and I would probably agree that this wasn't even a 100% complete game. They still had some errors offensively, but at the same time, they're getting to the point where they're now dominant in certain areas of the game, where it ends up they don't have to be completely balanced. I mean, outside of really the first two games, they haven't been completely balanced in any of the other games. Even the last two wins, they had, you know, 369 yards passing against the Jets, and when I say only, I don't mean it as a slight, but only 127 yards rushing against the Jets. This week they only had 177 yards passing and 261 yards rushing, which is, you know, just an absurd number. And so to see that you've got you know, just a game where they were able to really put together enough of a running game and an incredible defensive effort to win in a convincing fashion.
Yeah, it was, and on national television, it was a coming out party for Budda Baker. Lots to like. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's start with the talk about the defense specifically, but we're going to try and balance out the results of how good is the Cardinals defense and how bad is the Cowboys offense. That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. And the defense was the kind of the story of the game last night, Monday night against the Cowboys, because of what they were able to do. We've seen the defensive metrics so far this year, and I mean, we still have the Carolina game on our mind, but now we're looking at six games, and five of them, they are doing well in key metrics, which is getting to the quarterback, getting off the field on third down, and keeping teams out of the end zone in the red zone. And as a result, this team is really good statistically. Now, the dominance that they had defensively last night, how much are you willing to credit the defense with in terms of how good it actually is? And how much of it is a case of circumstance? In this case, the Cowboys team with their backup quarterback, and I'm not sure if they had any of their last year starters on the offensive line in the game. We all know they're Tyron Smith, Lael Collins gone, Travis Frederick retired, Zach Martin left the game. He entered the game banged up, and then as well, he also left the game getting it with a head injury. And so that offensive line was completely just backups, and backup defensive linemen tend to do better than backup offensive linemen, because backup defensive linemen even play. Backup offensive linemen don't typically play a lot. And so how much can we credit the Cardinals for their defense? Even again, we've got five out of six game where they are great defensively. And how much do we want to blame or to discredit them for the opponent they were playing?
You know, it's one of those situations where you look at it and you just, I mean, the reality is you can only play the teams in your way. And so I think putting up the numbers they're putting up, well, I understand the skepticism, and I think you and I would agree that they're not the second best defense in the NFL.
Well, and the thing is, we've seen it from the other end, if we go back a couple to the James Betcher years, and they're a top 10 defense in terms of points. but then they're average to below average, even, you know, 19th in scoring defense. And that was even before they were playing top offensive teams. And so Cardinals fans naturally are skeptical about defensive performances, and more so with the defensive coordinator in Vance Joseph that pretty much everyone wanted to fire last year.
Well, and I mean, here's what you look at. I mean, the number one team in scoring defense in the NFL right now is the Baltimore Ravens. They've played the Cleveland Browns, the Houston Texans, the Kansas City Chiefs, who they gave up 34 points in a loss to, the Washington football team, the Cincinnati Bengals, and the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, outside of obviously the Chiefs, who they got run over by, and then, you know, maybe the Texans. It's not like they've played a bunch of great offensive teams. You know,
but they've already passed the eye test and the talent test too, which is the other part of it.
Right. But I'm just saying, in the sense of, you can only play, you know, those teams that are on your schedule. I mean, you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers, same thing. They're third in defensive scoring, and I mean, their opponents, again, they're bad. I mean, you're talking about the Giants, the Broncos, the Texans, the Eagles, and the Browns. I mean, it's not like they're playing.
It's starting to sound like the entire league is bad.
Well, and that's kind of what I mean. The defense that's been, you know, when you look at it and you go, okay, who's been good defensively, and you know to use scoring defense, and I know that's not the be all end all, but when you look at the scoring defense, I think the teams you look at initially, you go, okay. I think the impressive teams right now are the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And, you know, they gave up 34 in their opening game to the Saints. They gave up 31 in a win over the Chargers. But it was that lasting impression of giving up only 10 points to the Green Bay Packers that really makes you go, okay, this is a really good team, right? Like, it kind of just is who and when you play somebody. I mean, I think we would all agree that the Cardinals are not a top five scoring defense in the NFL in terms of, like you said, pure talent. But I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that they're a top 12. And the further the season goes along, the more chances they're going to have, you know, to improve on that. I mean, you look at what they've got coming up, and obviously this isn't, you know, we're not going to go too far out, but I mean, they get the, you know, what, the best scoring offense in the NFL in the Seattle Seahawks. Okay, this is going to tell, obviously they're not going to hold the best scoring team in the NFL to 18 points, but what if they hold them to 26? I mean, that's a full score under their season average. That's actually really, that would be pretty impressive. You know, then they get the Miami Dolphins, who are apparently going to start Tua Tagovailoa. And they'll be his second game, and his first game is against the Rams. So, I mean, you're talking about two different, completely different teams. You know, and then they have the Bills and a Patriots team that doesn't look that good. The Giants and Eagles are still on this schedule. So, I mean, when it's all said and done, with the start that they've had and the opponents that they've kind of lined up, I think that they still end up in that top 12. And that's, I mean, that was kind of, and what did we say? We said if they were in the top 15,
that they'd be,
because that would be
probably a playoff team. Yeah, that's what it's lining up to be.
And because that would be such a massive jump from 28th to say 14th, so they you know, they got better by 50%. That's a massive jump. And now you might say, okay, well, now all of a sudden they're down, you know, from second to 14th in the NFL in stats. And it's like, yeah, I mean, technically they would lose 12 spots in that. And I understand that you don't, I mean, you want to hope that they're going to continue to play at a higher level than that. They're not going to, you know, give up more points. But at the same time, when you look at it, the 14th ranked team right now is giving, or let's say the 13th ranked team right now is giving up 23.5 points per game. The Cardinals are giving up 18.7. We're only talking about a 5 point per game differential between 2 and 13. So we're talking, you know, we're talking 11 spots with just 5 points per game. It's not like they are, you know, any of these teams giving up 30 points per game. And that's kind of the crazy thing about this season. You know, when you look at it, is last season, what did they give up? 28 points per game or something like that. 27.6. This season, that's top 20. I mean, so that's the thing, is you can say, oh, well, they've only played bad teams, or they've only done this, or, you know, they've only, whatever, however you want to look at it. 27.6 points per game last year would put them ahead of the Green Bay Packers, the Buffalo Bills, the New Orleans Saints. I mean, those are all teams that you look at and you go, oh, those are playoff teams. Like, those are good football teams. And that would be in front of all of those teams. So it is who they've played, but it's also just this NFL season. I mean, the offenses are infinitely more ahead of the defenses. And I think you're seeing that the Cardinals are doing enough to stay, you know, to not fall into that trap where they're getting blown out. And that's, I think that's the one big thing. I mean, even in the game where they got beat pretty well by the Panthers, you know, they only gave up 31 points. It's not like they gave up a 40 spot or anything like that. I mean, they only gave up 31 points. So when your high scores are 31 and 26 that you've given up in a game so far this season, that's not bad.
I want to think that it is, after looking over the first six games, the fact that what the Cardinals did against the Cowboys matches what they did against the other teams, excluding the Panthers, that tells me it's probably more the defense. Though I will say, I mean, when you are going against backup offensive linemen, when you're going up against a backup quarterback, and it did look like the Cowboys quit. I mean, they did sort of give up, and they were a sign of help. It was a mess. And so they did play ultimately a team that was bad on Monday night, and they need to regroup. But yeah, like you said, they can only play who they've played, and it's just people are worried about that Carolina performance. And there is something about Carolina playing the Panthers. Cardinals haven't beat them in so long.
Well, and they were also, I mean, let's be honest, they were also missing the guy that is clearly their best defensive player. And, I mean, it's not even close at this point. It's obvious that Buda Baker is the best player on that defense by such a large margin that you can't even, I mean, the difference he's made in the games that he's been in and healthy, I think, is just kind of stunning. And I mean, you look at it, he was obviously hurt in that Lions game and then missing in that Panthers game. And it just coincides with those are the two worst defensive performances they've had. And again, I mean, you can go back and say, well, you know, the 49ers offense was hurting and the Washington football team's offense is terrible. And you're right. I mean, those things are all true. But at the same time, if you take away, you know, the best player on Pittsburgh's defense, I mean, look at them before Minkah Fitzpatrick last year and with Minkah Fitzpatrick, you know, since they traded for him. You know, when you look at the Ravens and you take away, you know, a the cornerback, Marlon Humphrey, you know, their all pro corner, you know, you're going to lose something. And when you build a defense around a guy like the Cardinals have with Buda Baker, to not have Buda Baker means that your defense is going to struggle pretty heartily without him. And it's not an excuse, but it's just a reality of the situation.
Coming up next on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk of the world, we're going to talk a little bit more about the defense. What was there to like and what was not to like in what we saw on Monday night? That's coming up next on Rise of C-Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. So, what was there to like specifically about what the Cardinals did and on defense? And were there things to be concerning? I'm going to go with one off the bat is the fact that, especially early, they still got pressure. And so we were talking about it off the air. It's very interesting the fact that the Cardinals lose Chandler Jones, and then suddenly Vance Joseph appears to become a better defensive coordinator. It sounds kind of harsh just to say it like that. That's not to say that Chandler Jones, that the Cardinals are better off defensively without Chandler Jones, because that's certainly not the case. However, I think the challenge of putting lesser talented pass rushers or lesser talented edge rushers in positions to succeed, as opposed to you know, kind of how years before with Patrick Peterson, they basically said, you guard a guy, we'll take care of the rest. You could tell Chandler Jones, okay, win your battle, we're going to worry about other positions. And when he wasn't getting sacks, it was kind of noticeable. But, you know, he had specific roles for Dennis Gardeck. He had things for Isaiah Simmons. You saw different formations. You saw some work from Kevin Peterson. It was refreshing to see that perhaps because he was dealing with lesser talent, he had to work harder and therefore be a better coach to scheme things to get those players who aren't Chandler Jones in positions to be successful. Because Dennis Gardeck, I mean, come on. I did downplay his playing time. 10 snaps against the Jets and he got 2 sacks. I'm like, well, Kylie Fitz is coming back. Devon Connors is coming back, so he'll be good. But it turned out Kylie Fitz got hurt and he wasn't available, so Gardeck got some playing time. He only played, and it looked like, oh, they're playing him so much, and he got the hurry. He almost got the safety sack on Andy Dalton. But then you look at the game release or the stat book, and he only played 16 snaps. So he had a specific role in specific situations where he was given a chance to succeed, and he did. Byron Murphy had a fantastic game. I don't know if it was putting him in better positions or just being up for that game. Patrick Peterson made Amari Cooper disappear for the entire first half. There was a whole lot to like about probably for the first 3 quarters of the game. Just there was so much to like about what the defense did.
Yeah, and I mean, you talked a little bit about Vance and his work, and you know, it's something that we talked about when they hired him, and that was interesting is you kind of go through his history of as a defensive coordinator, and you know, it's kind of a short history, but he was the defensive coordinator in 2016 for the Miami Dolphins one season, and while it wasn't, you know, the best work, you know, he had a pretty good season in his first year as head coach with the Denver Broncos. You look at the names on that Miami defense that year and the guys who were getting the snaps and I can see how teams would be impressed with him and make him a head coach. Because remember, that Dolphins team made the playoffs. They lost in the wild card round to the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, they got blown out. But, I mean, just listen to these names and this was, I mean, this was 2016, so this was only 4 years ago. Kiko Alonso was the highest, you know, played the most snaps on the team. He's really done not a whole lot in the league since that 1 year. You had Ndamukong Suh, who's obviously phenomenal. And then I don't know many of these other guys. Issa Abdul Kudus, Tony Lippett, Byron Maxwell, Andre Branch, a guy by the name of Jordan Phillips. He's turned out, you know, he wasn't very good in Miami. They traded him. Remember that. I mean, they traded a second round pick after two seasons because couldn't get him to, you know, buy in. Or sorry, three seasons because they couldn't get him to buy in. You know, Bobby McCain, a 35-year-old Cameron Wake. I mean, these are the guys that he was doing it with in Miami that year, and those are the 10 players that played more than 50% of the snaps on defense in 2016. So when you go back and you look at it, and then you kind of, to your point, go, you take away a safety blanket or a safety net, however you want to look at it, in Chandler Jones, a guy that creates a pass rush all on his own and gets, you know, 18 sacks in a season or 19 sacks in a season. And all of a sudden you start having the scheme. And you see the creativity and the ability to scheme things up. And I think you wonder, okay, is that a one-off thing or is that just something that he did in this instance, and you're wondering, why don't you do that more often? Like, why is that not something that you do consistently? And you know, it's funny because this is just a football thing, and it's a frustrating thing to me, as somebody who, you know, coaches youth football, studies it at the higher levels a lot, you know, writes about it, covers the NFL, obviously. And you look at coaches and you look at the way that they fall back into kind of the basics and go, okay, well, our guy is better than your guy, so I'm going to let that play out the way it is. Instead of going, hey, this is the talent I have, let's scheme to the talent and let's scheme – let's try to, you know, get them in the best position to be successful. And a lot of times guys go, no, this is the system I run. This is what we do. And I'm not going to say that that's what Vance was doing before, and maybe now he's not. But it does seem to be that maybe that was Vance's fallback of, no, this is the scheme we run. You know, we've got Chandler Jones. We just signed Jordan Phillips and Jordan Hicks and Devondre Campbell. Like, this is what we're going to do. And now, like you said, you take out Chandler Jones, and that is a massive loss.
He's a cornerstone on the defense because of his skill set. He draws the attention up front.
Right. And so now all of a sudden it's like, as a coach, you go, okay, well, I'm going to have to scheme to overcome that loss. And so, you know, obviously – nobody, and Jess and I are not saying that, you know, maybe they'll be better off without Chandler Jones. That's not, I don't want anybody to take that away from what we're saying. What we're saying is maybe that it will cause Vance Joseph to have to do a better coaching job to kind of get to where he wants to be if he had his full arsenal of players. And so I think that's what you and I are seeing a little bit. Obviously it's just been, you know, a half in a game, but I think that's what we're seeing a little bit thus far, from him, is that, hey, he does have some ability to scheme things. He does have an ability to be creative, run sub packages and get guys in a position to be successful. It sucks that it looks like at this point it had, you know, it took losing an All-Pro for him to get there. But, you know, maybe in terms of overall effectiveness, you look at that and go, well, they weren't going to win a Super Bowl this year anyways. And maybe I'm wrong on that, but they were likely not going to win a Super Bowl this year. So maybe 1 year of him having to do more scheming, get guys in a position and kind of show his mettle again as a defensive coordinator will in the long term create a better, you know, product and more success overall.
Well, and to point out, I think it also proves that at least at the edge, they do have better talent than probably people thought. And he's using pieces wisely. It started out with Devon Kennard and Hassan Reddick. You saw a lot of Zach Allen. You'd see Kennard come out for Dennis Gardeck in some cases. And so you had Reddick and Gardeck rushing the edge on clear passing downs only. It was just really useful the way he did things. And it wasn't – honestly, it was roughly what I expected it to be, except that Kylie Fitz was hurt and it wasn't Isaiah Simmons being used. I expected Zach Allen to get that sort of run protector position in. I expected to see Hassan Reddick. But instead of Gardeck, I expected rotation of Fitz and a little bit of Isaiah Simmons, which we didn't really get on the edge, although he did get some playing time.
Yeah, and you look at it, and I think, you know, I noticed a couple packages where they had Kennard lined up as like their nose tackle in the pass rushing situation. And so that's the thing is, again, when you can't just go, okay, this guy's better than everybody else, you know, in terms of Chandler Jones, and instead you go, okay, how do I manufacture a similar – you know, a similar result without Chandler Jones, which again is impossible. I mean, it really is. You have to get creative. And so, yeah, you get Dennis Gardeck in on passing situations. You drop to the nose, you bring in, you know, different packages of guys. You put Isaiah Simmons on the field and let him drop back into coverage. I mean, you do different things and all of a sudden now you're seeing maybe the result we were expecting with Chandler Jones. But it's, you know, obviously happening because they just don't have Jones.
Now, other things to like, the big time Dallas receivers didn't have much of an impact on that game. CeeDee Lamb picked up some garbage time yards. Michael Gallup had a couple of plays. But Amari Cooper was and Patrick really, I don't know why they went away from it, but he basically followed Amari Cooper in the first half and did nothing. So you got great play from the secondary. Buddha was all over the field. Kirkpatrick gets an interception. Buddha gets an interception. Byron Murphy played himself a hell of a game. Maybe it was playing up because of the hype that CeeDee Lamb was getting, or we're continuing, let's be honest, it was just last week that he stopped having to play two different roles, and Kirkpatrick was now in shape enough to play all the border corners, whether it's two or three corners in the game, and Murph just comes in the nickel now, and now he's thriving. We continue to see the Cardinals actually do well guarding the receivers, and then the Cowboys just didn't take advantage of the middle of the field, and maybe they're scheming that better because against Carolina that was the big thing over and over and over and over and over and over, and it looks like they've kind of fixed that problem. Now, things not to like, I think first and foremost you have to look squarely at and hope that when Dre Kirkpatrick came out, that it was simply to give Kevin Peterson work, because Kevin Peterson did struggle badly in his reps late in the game.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that came down to where it was happening. I mean, let's be honest. I like Kevin Peterson, but I would never ask him to shadow a number one receiver. And asking him to cover Amari Cooper seemed a bit silly at times, but that's the nice thing about being up 31-3 is that you can do things that you would probably never realistically look at doing in an NFL game if when you're up by that much. And so, you know, whether it's getting Isaiah Simmons more reps, whether it's getting Kevin Peterson reps against really good receiving, you know, other receivers, I think it just puts the Cardinals in a better position later on if they need quality snaps out of those guys in a big game, you know, where you say, you know, God forbid Byron Murphy goes down for a game, you know, twists an ankle and he can't go. And now all of a sudden you need Kevin Peterson to go out and play against Seattle or, you know, get reps against the Rams in a game that has playoff implications. You know, that's what you're doing there is getting that guy run. And the other thing is you're seeing if that was to happen, can that guy play? Because let's remember, they just signed Prince Amukamara to the practice squad. That might have been all right, Kevin, here's your chance to show us that you can be that fourth corner on the roster. And we don't have to elevate Prince, and maybe he failed. I mean, that's a fair question to ask, is that maybe he did come up short in that, you know, opportunity.
Yeah. And other than that, you continue to see them do well on third down. You see them do well in the red zone. They're getting to the quarterback. I mean, these are things that you like to see. Now, the Cowboys ran a whole lot more plays than the Cardinals did, which, and so the defense played more reps than ideally you'd have, but they were efficient on offense. And so not much to complain about that. They have their hands full this weekend, though, and we'll talk about that a little bit. But coming next on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web, we're going to move on to the offensive side of the ball. What was there to like? What was there not to like? And what are we to make of the performances of Kyler Murray and Kenyon Drake? That's going on next on Rise of C-Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's react to the play on offense. They scored 38 points. Did that feel like a good offensive performance overall?
You know, I thought it was a C-plus performance. They had a couple big throws or big passing plays. They had obviously a dominant rushing performance, but they lacked the consistency in the passing game to give it anything more than an above average, you know, or average to slightly above average performance. It wasn't good. It wasn't great. I thought it was timely and effective. I thought it was a performance where you saw their ability to impose their will on a team, which is different for the Cardinals.
Totally.
But I mean, I wouldn't say it was a good performance by any stretch of the imagination, which to me is also exciting. And I know people don't agree with this, but you're still in game, what was that, game 22 of the Kyler and Cliff era. I mean, we're 22 games in, and you have a guy in Kyler Murray who's on pace for just under 4,000 yards passing, just under 1,000 yards rushing, and 45 total touchdowns, and you're complaining.
It feels like that. But at the same time, it was clear that Kyler was not on his game yesterday. Though it's really interesting to see those two misses to Andy Isabella. as upsetting as they were to see, because, well, one, it either looked like Kyler was just really off, or two, Andy had no idea where he was supposed to be going with the route or able to see the ball. I was super excited by the fact if they took those two shots early, what's going to be that, like, if they keep taking shots, they're going to hit on those, because Andy was wide open on both of those. And it turns out, you know, Christian Kirk was wide open. He got a free release. He got the touchdown pass that way. And so it was, but for some reason, Kyler's rhythm just couldn't quite get on. And he hit the big play to Kirk. He got the catch and run by Hopkins, which really boosted his numbers. But other than that, he made a couple of nice throws, but you could just tell that he was not, whether it was all the hype around the game, maybe it was the nerves, and we've really never seen him be like, the moment was too big for him. He probably was just a little too amped up with everything that went on. And but the funny thing is, even though he was bad in the passing, you could say that, he still didn't turn the ball over. He threw two touchdown passes, and then his impact in the running game was still like, Cliff talked about it on Tuesday, is still his presence dominated. And I think that's a good way to describe it, because even when he wasn't on in the passing game, his presence was felt, because whether it was missing a deep throw that was there, or running for a first down or scoring a touchdown, the Cowboys didn't have any answer for him. The failures or the mistakes that were made by Kyler had nothing to do with the Cowboys, pretty much. And it was all about him, which is both, you know, concerning and both encouraging at the same time, because it's not like the Cowboys did anything. He still controlled that game. And Adam Green, who used to be at Arizona Sports, I saw a tweet of his, and I thought it probably describes Kyler the best way possible. He's not a finished product, a quarterback, and he's definitely not finished as a passer. He's not a great passer yet. He can have big games, but he is so dynamic that not only does he make up for his teammates' mistakes, he makes up for his own mistakes, and no matter what happens, he still can make plays. So even when he's not having the best game passing, he still is impactful.
Yeah, and that's what the reality of the situation is right now, is that he is a dominant and impactful force in the game. And he makes this team better and consistently better. And it's something that, you know, we talked about it before. We're used to quarterbacks that throw for 40, and obviously not in Arizona, but we'll just say from Arizona, you know, the best quarterbacks in Arizona history have led the team, you know, to 35 touchdown passes and maybe had two rushing touchdowns. So you look at a guy that throws for 4,400 yards and 35 touchdowns, and you go, that's a quarterback. That's how you have a great quarterback season. And you look at Kyler and you go, okay, well, what if he has 4,900 total yards and 45 total touchdowns, but it's only 3,950 passing yards and 950 rushing yards, and only 27 passing touchdowns, but he has, you know, he adds in, or 29 passing touchdowns, but he adds in, you know, 16 rushing. Is that a good season? Yeah,
that's really, really good.
And that's the thing, is people will look at it and go, well, he only threw for 3,929 touchdowns. And you go, yeah, but he impacts the game in so many other ways that he doesn't have to throw for 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns to have a great season. And that's the thing, is I also think he's in season two. He's going to get there. It may never be 5,000, but he's going to be a guy that goes for over 5,000 total yards in a season and probably gets over 50 total touchdowns.
That's crazy. Now, yeah, and to think that, and maybe it was unrealistic as expectations, but when he isn't a dominant star, we feel let down. But then I don't know why we expect that, because you look at Aaron Rodgers play against the Bucks, who is having an ungodly good year, and then he has the game that he does. Quarterbacks aren't always on their game. Now, it was extremely, like, 9 of 24 is an extreme type thing. I mean, that puts him, like, in terms of 40% passer below and winning a game. I mean, that's you know, Josh Rosen, Ryan Lindley type character. That's in those type of categories. Or Tom Tupa, when he completed 9 passes and won a game. Those are not great company. But none of them had the other impact that he did. He threw 2 touchdowns. He ran for another. He's now up to 16 total touchdowns in 6 games. He hasn't turned the ball over in his last 2 games. And so he's protecting the ball. He's getting the ball in the end zone. And even though there's still room for growth, my goodness, he's still having a great year.
Yeah, that's the best thing, is that it's not a finished product. So throwing for just shy of 4,000 yards and just shy of 30 touchdowns, by the way, would be the 3rd greatest passing season in Arizona Cardinals history, is looked at as he's still growing. I mean, and that's the thing, is I think because of these video game numbers that guys like Patrick Mahomes are putting up, which he's done once. And don't get me wrong, Patrick Mahomes is, you know, could go down as one of the 5 greatest quarterbacks ever. He's already cemented himself as one of the, you know, best quarterbacks in all of football. But his pace for the season is obviously a little higher than Kyler's, but it's not like we're talking about another season where he's going to throw, or a season where he's going to throw for well over 5,000 yards. He's on pace for 4,500 yards. You know, he's only on pace for but 40 touchdown passes. And then you combine that with his, you know, rushing totals, and he's on pace for right around the same amount of yards and three more touchdowns total than Kyler. So again, is it a matter of how you get the yards, or is it and touchdowns, or is it just getting the yards and touchdowns? I mean, I think ideally we would all prefer that Kyler throw for those yards, because it just means he's taking less hits, or there's less of a chance that he's going to get hit while he's running the football. But at the same time, at the end of the day, the results are all that matter. And right now, those results are, you know, really good.
Yeah, and I think what it is there's the probably the feeling deep down where we know, or we think, that the production and the running game is a finite thing. And that for him, for have the long-term success, he's going to have to get the passing numbers. But that might not necessarily be the case. I mean, we've seen it from other running. You know, Steve Young went from being super mobile to a great passer who could run. John Elway, you go, Randall Cunningham was another one that did that. And they all develop into great passers. Yeah. But let's talk about Kenyon Drake now for a second, because he, by all accounts, it's been a thing. Cardinals fans watch him, and he doesn't really pass the eye test. He has had himself a solid season. Not a great season, but the Dallas game, he broke out. He was having a good game even before that last carry. Now, he started slow. First half, 7 carries, 19 yards. I mean, the Cardinals, with the running game, often take their time to get in there. But we talked about this in a previous show. Kenyon has become a great second half and especially a fourth quarter runner. I really think, in my memory of watching the Cardinals play, it is the first time that they really have a back who, when they have a lead, you can trust is going to churn the yards to move the chains and get first downs. Even when the Cardinals were great, their running game sometimes could stall. And so you got a little bit from Chris Johnson when he was here, a little bit from Adrian Peterson, but they weren't warning them up. And Kenyon Drake closing out games when they've had a lead in the fourth quarter has been fantastic. Now, he started slow. He's had a workman's level. He has one bad game, 13 carries for 35 yards, but that was a game they were behind, and so they didn't run the ball as much. Other than the one game, so in five of six games, he's had at least 16 carries. That's something we didn't see early last year. Now, granted, they were behind a lot. Drake is pretty much doing what he did before. He now has 478 yards. He's on pace for over 1,270 yards this year. Now, that was boosted by the 69-yard run on this last carry. But even then, take away that run. He was at 19 carries for 95 yards. That's 5 yards a carry. You can't expect much more of that from a running back. And he built that on his runs in the second half, and especially in the fourth quarter. Last year in his eight games, he had three games where he rushed for under 40 yards. And he still managed to have 643 yards. You know, it's what you're looking at last year, this year, statistically, he's producing at the same amount. But just against Dallas, it was the first time he had the explosive runs. And that's probably going to continue. Dallas is, I mean, Seattle's defense, not great. Buffalo's rush defense is terrible. I mean, they've got the Giants coming up. The Eagles have given up massive amounts of points. And so you're going to have the opportunity. Kenyon's going to have the opportunity. And so whether or not you're disappointed with how he looks early, because in early in games, you're like, oh, he looks kind of like David Johnson. He's doing his job. He's perfect for what the Cardinals have needed. And maybe he's not been as dynamic early, but he has done exactly what you need that running back to do late in the game.
Yeah, and we talked about it last week, I think it was, that the thing with Kenyon has always been he's a guy that kind of grows as his touches come and then, you know, kind of breaks out later in the games. And that's kind of what we've been missing this year is his long runs, those 15, 20-yard runs. And he had two of those in the game before the big run to end it. And all of a sudden, he was starting to get loose a little bit. He was starting to be able to, you know, make guys miss. He was starting to get 4 or 5 yards extra when he, you know, put his shoulder down. And that, I think, is a byproduct of, one, the Dallas defense being soft, but two, again, when you're able to run the ball that efficiently and that effectively consistently, it really demoralizes a team. And you know, and that's a big thing, and something that really can help a running back kind of get in a zone where he then starts to put together 2, 3, 4 games like that. You know, it's kind of the opposite of what we saw with Zeke in the game, where you can see that Zeke, after that first fumble, was in his own head. And he was going to, you know, he started to play scared of making another mistake, and he made another one, and all of a sudden he's not, you know, running as hard, he's not accelerating as fast. And I think a lot of times what Kenyon was doing this year is he knows that he was unlikely to get that, you know, 24, 25 carry game. And so he kept trying to, instead of taking what the defense gave him and maybe just getting 4, 4.5 yards a carry, he was instead looking to make one big play. He was looking to make one big run. And all of a sudden, you know, he went from averaging, you know, 4.5, 5 yards a carry to he was only averaging, before yesterday's game, he was averaging under 4 yards a carry, I believe, or just like right around 4 yards a carry. After yesterday's game, on the season, he's averaging 4.6 yards per carry. And that's because he averaged 8.2 yards per carry in that game. And so I think that's one of the big things that you look at for a running back overall is, I mean, he has only two games now with over 80 yards rushing. He has only three games now with over 70 yards rushing. But that's the first game of the season. Oh, sorry, the second game of the season where he's had 20 carries. And it's no coincidence that both those games he's averaged over 4 yards per carry. And that's because he's a guy that as the game wears down, he gets better. He's able to take advantage of a tired defense or defense that's playing, you know, too aggressively, and he's able to make plays. I'm not worried about Kenyon Drake. I don't know if he's the best running back in this offense. I still think Chase Edmonds might be because of his elusiveness and quickness in and out of the hole. But I think Kenyon Drake is a really good fit in this offense and offers a physicality that Eno Benjamin and Chase Edmonds lack in their running style. And that's on Cliff to be able to, you know, get the most out of that and utilize that to kind of give him a chance. Because, I mean, let's think about it. Last week in the Jets win, he had 18 carries for 60 yards. Before that 69-yard run, he had 19 carries for 95 yards. Or no, not 90. Yeah, 95 yards. And so, I mean, if you give him one more carry and he gets a, you know, a 60 yard run, is 19 and 120 that different from 20 and 164? I mean, yeah, 44 yards, but I mean, you're just talking about one big run, and that's all that he kind of, you know, he needs is he needs that one run a game where he's able to kind of wear down a defense and then he's able to break one. And it's not going to be 60 plus every time, but maybe it's 35 or 40 plus.
Coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best star of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about, finally, our last segment, coming up against the Seattle Seahawks. What do we have as we have a 1-2 in the division battle coming up? That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best star of Cardinals talk on the web. It's time to talk about the Seahawks. They are next on the schedule. They are coming off their bye. And so the Cardinals are at a disadvantage each time they play the Seahawks. This time they have a slightly short week, and the Seattle is coming off their bye week. Next time they will play them on a Thursday night. Not ideal. But this Seahawks team is not the Seahawks team that we've seen in years past, except that Russell Wilson continues to be a god in terms of playing the quarterback position. He's got 19 touchdown passes this season. It's absurd. It is absurd what he is doing. However, they fall behind consistently because their defense has been very, very bad this year. How is this going to play out this year? And I have to point out, the Cardinals have not beat the Seattle Seahawks in their home stadium since Russell Wilson's debut in 2012.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't look at this game and go, oh, well, this is definitely a game that the Cardinals should win. I don't think they're favored, are they?
No, it's 3.5 for the Seahawks.
Yeah, and I think that's about right. I mean, they're the better offense right now, and I think you're still going to see, whether it's odds makers, fans, pundits, I think you're going to continue to see you did well in this situation, keep showing me type of attitude to the Arizona Cardinals defense. So, you know, a 3.5-point Seattle favorite, I think it's fair. I mean, I don't know at this point if I'm going to say that Seattle outright wins or not, but Seattle's offense is so efficient, both running and throwing the football, that you're going to need, one, your best defensive effort of the season. And that's not necessarily going to mean the least amount of yards or the least amount of points allowed, but instead creating turnovers like you did against Dallas and getting key stops that you were unable to get against Detroit and Carolina. Those are going to be the differences this week, because you are going up against the best offense in the NFL. It is. And I think when you look at what Russell Wilson's done this year, he's been protected well. Again, they're running the ball in an incredibly efficient clip, and they have a number of guys that are contributing to a really good rushing offense. Chris Carson has 289 yards. Carlos Hyde and Travis Homer each have over 50 yards rushing. Russell Wilson has 150 yards. I mean, they just run the ball really effectively. But at the end of the day, it's all Russell Wilson. I mean, he's completing nearly 73% of his passes. His touchdown percentage, I'd have to look this up because I don't know for sure, but I've got to imagine it's the best that we've ever seen in NFL history, because it's at 11.2%. So 11% of his passes are touchdowns. He's thrown the ball 169 times. He has 19 touchdowns. I mean, he's on pace. He's on pace for, what is that, 50 or 48? Just under 50 touchdowns on the season. He's only thrown three interceptions. He doesn't make mistakes. He's averaging over 300 yards a game passing.
Let me run those numbers again. 19 by 5. He's on pace for 60 touchdown passes.
Oh, okay. There you go. So, yeah. So, I mean, you're talking the greatest offensive quarterback season maybe in the history of the NFL. I mean, that's all the Cardinals are going up against this week. So, it's not – I mean – so – but I think that's – you know, it's ironic that that's how this falls, is that you get a completely dominant performance by the defense. You boost your numbers to becoming, you know, number two in the NFL in scoring defense. They sit at, 11th in passing defense, 17th in rushing defense, so not great there, but 13th in yards allowed. So, I mean, I guess everybody would agree, you know, good numbers, top half of the league, which is what we talked about. And now you get to go and prove it against literally the best defense or the best offense in the NFL. And then on the flip side, to Jess's point, this is a bad defense. I mean, they just are. They're a team that thrives on big plays. They're a team that gives up a ton of big plays. So what it comes down to this week for a win is going to be the Cardinals are going to have to figure out a way to get a stop that teams like the Vikings, the Cowboys, the Patriots couldn't get against this offense. And that's what it comes down to. I mean, you look at their defense, they gave up 434 passing yards to the Falcons. They gave up 397 to the Patriots. They gave up 461 passing yards to the Cowboys.
They're giving up the most yards and the most passing yards. They're giving up 470 yards a game, 370 passing yards a game on average. Now, I will say this, while they give up yards in spades, they are middle of the road in terms of points allowed, as they're giving up, I think, 27 points a game.
Yeah, they're at
teams
eight.
They're in not bad shape. But they are definitely a bend but not break defense.
And the thing they do better than anybody else is cause turnovers.
Yes,
they're number one in the NFL in turnovers caused. They have forced 10 turnovers on the season already, and they've only played five games. For instance, you know, go back to the Cardinals. The Cardinals have forced seven turnovers on the season in six games, including four the last game. So when you look at what the Seahawks do, that is how they win the game. I mean, against the Falcons, they forced two turnovers. Against the Patriots, they forced one. Against the Cowboys, they forced three. Against the Dolphins, they forced two. Against the Vikings, they forced two. They gave up, in two of those games, they gave up over 500 yards of total offense. And all five of those games, they gave up over 400 total yards of offense. The Cardinals' defense has only given up over 400 yards once this year. And, I mean, you look at their games against the Washington football team in Dallas, they barely gave up over 300 yards. And I think you and I would, you know, be okay with saying that a lot of those getting over 300 yards, a lot of those were garbage time things. Yeah. You know, and so when you look at it, the Cardinals defense has been, you know, better in spades than the Seahawks defense. But the reality is that this Seahawks offense is just playing at such a high level, and their defense forces turnovers. And when you force turnovers on defense, what that does is that negates all those yardage, all that yardage that occurred. So all of a sudden you have, you know, you might have 500 total yards of offense, but if you turn the ball over three times, that just means you went up and down the field and didn't score. and that's kind of what Jess was getting at. I mean, when you're but you're giving up 27 points per game, and that's basically middle of the road in this season, you can get away with it because your defense is causing turnovers that allows for your offense, the best offense in the NFL, to make plays. And that's, I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. I mean, they're the number one scoring offense in the NFL. They're the number four passing offense. They're, you know, rushing wise, they're right in the middle of the road, but they score, they get a ton of yards and they score a ton of points, and they do it in a quick style. That's the craziest thing, is that it doesn't take a ton of plays. They're 31st in plays run per drive, which is insane to me to think that they only need five plays, but they're the highest scoring offense in the NFL. Because that's the thing, they can score from anywhere on the field at any time in the game, and that's just who they are. And so that's what I'm actually most interested in, is where do the Cardinals stack up against the best in the NFC? We're not just talking just the NFC West. The Seahawks are the best team in the NFC. They're the number ones.
And we look at, let's look at their game, their last played. And a Minnesota Vikings team, that's not really good. They had, like, they should have won that game. That was stupid. It was stupid what they did. I could get why they would try to do that, but knowing what Russell Wilson, when they should have kicked the field goal and at least at worst gone into overtime. They should have done that. But the Cardinals, the way they play offensively, it comes down to, if they can score early, they have the type of offense that can keep the Seahawks from coming back, because the Seahawks have been great about coming back. But here's the thing. You have a running back in Kenyon Drake, and you have a quarterback in Kyler Murray, that in particular Drake, later in the game when you're trying to slow down the game and limit the possessions, Drake does that. And that's going to be interesting to see, because the running backs, Seattle's been hurt by running backs. It's just the problem is they get the ball back, and you just know if you give Russell Wilson time, he's going to get it down there. I'm interested to see how the passing game goes this game, because the Cardinals really have been good against receivers overall. Like, they've had receivers have big games, but the impactful games outside of the Panthers game, they've guarded the board. So the DK Metcalf effect, I want to see how that goes. Tyler Lockett, those two players in particular and how they impact the game, I'm interested in seeing, because after what we saw, now granted it was bad offensive line and Andy Dalton, can they have similar success against those two receivers in particular? Because if they do, guess what? Then the Cardinals are going to have nice success defensively. I'm not saying they're going to shut up, or they're going to win by 38 to 10, but I like if they can get a lead, they have the type of offense that will be able to keep Seattle from rallying like they've done.
Yeah, and that's going to be the key to this entire day is if you can limit the possessions and you can't waste possessions. You know, and not – it's going to sound bad when I say it this way, so I don't want it taken this way. But this game reminds me a lot of what we saw between the Houston Texans and Tennessee Titans, in that the Titans probably are the better team than the Texans, but the Texans played better in that game. It just comes down to you can't give a team like the Titans another chance to make a play, because that's they have the pieces to do that. And I think that's a lot of the same thing with the Seahawks, and we saw it against the Vikings. You have to go for the jugular. You can't give them another chance to go down and make a play. And so, you know, when you look at it, Minnesota raced out to a big lead, and then they basically just held on after that, tried to hold on after that to get this, you know, get the game over with. And I just don't think you can play that way. I think you have to play aggressive, you know, and they played aggressive on that last possession when they went for it on fourth down, and it just, you know, to ice the game basically, and it just didn't work out. But I think you have to play that way the entire game. I don't think you can have the lulls that the Cardinals had in the Dallas game or even the Jets game. I think they need to come out and they need to be able to put points on the board consistently throughout the first, second, third, and fourth quarter if they want to win this game. They can't have, you know, they can't have 30 points or 31 points in two quarters, because I can guarantee you that the Seahawks will be able to put up 38 in one quarter if they have to.
So how do you see this? So other matchups, the one thing that they don't have a good defensive line. They don't create much pass rush. They didn't do that last year. What is their weakness? What is their weakness defensively?
I think that's a lot of it. I mean, their linebackers are their strength. And so they don't – while they can get hurt in the running game, it's you have to wash their front line into their second or into the linebackers. You can't let their defensive line occupy blockers and let their linebackers run free. In the same way, their linebackers are phenomenal in coverage. I mean, they have the best linebackers in the NFL, the best trio of linebackers in the NFL, in Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, thank you. And then I know Bruce Irvin's hurt, but they're...
And so is Jordan Brooks, and I think they bring back in Michael Kendrick again. So, but that third linebacker tends to be good anyway because of the guys they're playing next to.
Right. And so where you have to take advantage of this team is you have to play basically keep away from their linebackers. You can't let their linebackers beat you. And to be fair, it's kind of like what you saw this week against Dallas with Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith, is that those are their best players on defense. And if you're able to stay away from those guys, then you have a really good chance of being successful. But if those guys are making plays, if they're able to run free, you know, against the run, and they're getting in drops in coverage, it's going to be it's going to be a long day. But the reality is, at this point, they're still linebackers, and they're going to have to, you know, make all the plays, and they just – they can't throughout the game.
So,
which is why they are, you know, so bad defensively right now, because – they have great linebackers, and then they just really don't have much else that you would say is good. They have nothing else great, and I wouldn't say they have anything else that's good. They have some average players along the defensive line and in the secondary. Jamal Adams, is he hurt or is he back this week?
That I don't know yet. I haven't checked on what his status is.
Okay, and I mean, Adams is obviously, you know, another guy that's phenomenal. But, you know, he's been dealing with some injuries. So we'll see how that kind of works out. So in the end, it's going to come down. It really is going to come down to, can the Cardinals offense do enough where the Cardinals defense doesn't have to make that one last stop? You know, and that's because it's unfair to expect them to be the first team all year that gets the one stop against the Seahawks defense or the offense. Cause I mean, nobody stopped them this year. I mean, that's just the reality of it.
It's true. It's true. But prediction time, I expected a barn burner this last game. I'm going to expect it again. And I think I have just a little bit of confidence that I think the Cardinals can pull this off. Now, in terms of the big picture, 4-2, I think is exactly where we both had the Cardinals sitting after six games. It just happened differently. And I think we both had this game pegged as a loss, I think. Maybe not. I can't remember. But if they can somehow get this win, go into the bye 5-2, that means they pretty much need to win five. They only need five of their last nine games to pretty much get a playoff spot. But I have them holding on. I don't know if it's they do the winning drive or if they hold Wilson and the Seahawks. They're the ones that makes the one stop. But I have them winning this game 34-31, and it will be every bit as entertaining as we thought that the Cowboys-Cardinals game was going to be.
Yeah, and I'm going to stay in the prove me wrong mode. I think that this Seattle team right now is just playing at a different level offensively than everybody else, and their defense is just timely with turnovers. I think that's going to be kind of the key. I think it's going to be 37-35 walk-off field goal for the Seahawks. And while it'll be a bummer to be 4-3 at the bye, I think that's where both of us had them bye. And like you said, it came in a different route than what we expected. But in the end, they're where they are. And, you know, they've played – I would say if they lose a close game to Seattle, or win a close game against Seattle, that they're probably slightly ahead of where we expected them to be at this point in season two of Cliff and Kyler.
And with that, let's wrap up episode 283 of the show. We'll be back again next week, and we can talk about what the Cardinals do, hopefully a five-win team. Hopefully they've matched their last season total and kind of talk about where the Cardinals at as they will be going into their bye week. So we'll be back again next week. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening, and go Cardinals. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.
Roll!